You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Kevin Anderson, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast.
I've written two books, and I'm on the cusp of writing my third. There's nothing more frustrating than having an idea or story bursting out of the seams of your being, but not having the skills or time to tell it. I first experienced this while writing my book, Taking Stock. I had hired a coach to help me put together the book proposal. Imagine how it felt to realize that after years of blog writing, my writing ability didn't even come close to translating into long form. I felt like I had to learn all over again. Unlike me, many who have stories to tell neither have the time nor inclination to learn how to do it pleasingly on their own. For them, there are writers for hire. Today, we talk ghostwriting both as a phenomenon as well as a business with Kevin Anderson. While earning his PhD at Harvard, Kevin Anderson started a tiny ghostwriting agency to pay off his pending student debts. That tiny agency is now KAA, which boasts a staff of New York Times bestselling writers and editors and competes with the traditional Big Five publishers using about a fourth of the resources and a tenth of the staff. Kevin Anderson, welcome to Earn and Invest. A recent article in The Telegraph about you is titled "Tiffs, Trysts, and Egos Inside the Risky Business of Celebrity Ghostwriting." Tell us your favorite juicy story you've heard or written about as a ghostwriter.
Wow. All right. My favorite juicy story. Well, you know, part of the, a difficult part about being a ghostwriter is you can't really tell all your stories. A lot of them are under strict non-disclosure agreements, but geez, I mean, we've had quite a few, and we've been in quite a few pickles when it comes to working with clients and getting in kind of interesting situations. I think, there was one situation where I won't name any names, but we had to send a writer down to an island in the Caribbean to spend which sounds really great on the surface, and it was to spend quite a bit of time with this client. And you know, as you can imagine, spending spending a week on an island with a stranger and getting to know them in all their intimate and unique ways turned out to be a pretty difficult task for the writer. Let's just say they couldn't wait to get back onto American soil. And they came away with quite a few stories that, again, I can't get into too many details, but let's just say they were really happy to get back home.
You know, I imagine we don't really talk about this often, but a lot of what you guys do is behind the scenes. It's ghostwriting, which means a lot of times the public doesn't know that you've done a good deal of this writing in collaboration with the author. Do you ever wish you could take credit? Because I know after writing books myself, sometimes you're like, yeah, I'm really proud of that. It would be nice if my name was actually on it.
Yeah. And, you know, we really push for that in general. It's something that we actually write into our contracts that the author gives credit to both the writer and the agency in their acknowledgments or in the cover credit. And you know, things have changed recently. You know, 15 years ago, it seemed like everybody was really tepid about this and wanted complete anonymity, and they didn't want the ghostwriter or any kind of collaborator's name anywhere near their book. And now that's really changed. I think with J.R. Moringer and Spare and a lot of the, you know, a lot of the best-selling books that you see on the New York Times bestseller list, you'll see that there is like a with credit or some kind of similar collaborative credit that the writers are getting. And so we really, really push for that. You know, it doesn't have, you know, it's one of those things that it's an optional, you know, we'll remove it from the contract, but we do put it there in the base contract just because we think it's really important for writers to get credit for being a part of these projects. And let's face it. I mean, it's still, you know, no book is written in isolation. Every book has editors and many people that are part of building that book and making it into its final form. And a collaborator or ghostwriter, you know, they're by no means the author of the book. You know, they're just a sophisticated pen that's helping the writer get their words out in a professional way that's really going to connect and really going to be, you know, it's going to be all their voice, all their ideas, but also connect with a audience. And, you know, just like most people don't build their own houses, but they have a really good idea of how they want it to look. You know, you hire a professional to do what you're not a professional at doing yourself.
Take us back to when you got in this business. You were a PhD at Harvard. Did your degree have anything to do with ghostwriting or writing in general? And if not, how did you end up here?
Right. Yeah. And just a clarification. So I was on the PhD track, but I actually went out with my master's because, you know, the plan was to continue on with the PhD and be a professor. And it was, you know, I was going to be a philosophy or a literary, like maybe an English professor. I was kind of I was studying literary theory. And when the business took off while I was still a grad student, I made the decision to kind of go out with my master's degree rather than continue on. You know, literary theory, I guess it is related to writing, but it was much more philosophical. The you know, it was going to be five more years of essentially intellectual masturbation and just continually getting really minute about, you know, getting very critical about specific things to do with language. And I was studying kind of postmodern literary theory and criticism. It really appealed to me to go into business, and I caught the entrepreneurial spirit. I loved creating something new. I loved the whole process of working with clients and growing and really serving them at a really high level, and also just giving all my friends work. You know, so it was I had a lot of, you know, you'd be surprised. I mean, even with a Harvard degree, even with a Harvard PhD, if it's in the humanities, it's not so easy to get work. And it was really a lot of fun to get all my friends and classmates paying work for doing something that they love, which was, you know, editing and reviewing. At that time, it was mostly tutoring and giving feedback on academic work. There was no ghostwriting at that point. Ghostwriting came much later in the process. In the beginning, it was more of a tutoring company and academic advisement company, and it wasn't until a couple years later that we were getting interest from the book industry.
So tell me about ghostwriting here, because I've gone through the process of writing now two books, and so what generally happens, what most people maybe don't realize, is you write a draft, you write a book, you might even have a lot of input from the editor if you've sold that to a big five publisher. And then once you hand it in, they also do some developmental editing. They also will spend a lot of time with you, possibly even rewriting the book. So why go for a ghostwriter as opposed to kind of getting plugged into the traditional model of, you know, write your book proposal, sell it, get someone then on the publisher side to help you make sure you get it out in good shape, so to speak?
You know, a lot of publishers hire us actually to do that work. And then a lot of agents, literary agents, hire us again to not only write the manuscript, but also write the proposal in the first place. You know, writing a proposal is a big endeavor, as you know. And for those who aren't a professional at doing so, you know, it can be a big assistance to either hire a book coach, you know, which is very common, as you know, or a writer that can really do a lot of the heavy lifting. But at the very least, it's just, it's really helpful to have somebody that's a professional to guide you along the process and make sure that the proposal is something that's really going to land. And, you know, when a lot of authors come to us, you know, even ones that are professional writers, they're coming to us with, you know, trying to figure out how to make their idea appeal to the marketplace. How do you make it appeal to an agent that's then going to represent you to a publisher? We do agenting as well here in certain categories. And a lot of the work that we do on the front end is with professional writers, but they don't always know how to best market themselves and appeal to an agent or a big five publisher and get that publishing deal. And then secondly, you know, obviously if somebody's just not a professional writer at all and they really struggle with writing, but they have great ideas, a really great concept, you know, it's invaluable to have someone that can put that on the page in a way that's really going to wow an agent or publisher and facilitate that deal.
So how big is this market? Like, how much of a need is there for these type of services?
Well, I mean, it's a big need. I mean, we work with 500 authors annually. We're you know, when you're looking at the bestseller list, a lot of those, when you look at the New York Times bestseller list, you're going to see a lot of titles that are from people that you're going to question, like, how do they have the time? Or this person doesn't really seem like they would be a professional writer that could pull off this kind of a book. A lot of those titles are written in collaboration with a writer, book coach, or ghostwriter. And let's face it, all of them are written in collaboration with at least an editor. You know, it's a huge market, not just the books that are on the New York Times bestseller list or on the other major bestseller lists. There's, you know, the rise of the hybrid publisher has led to thousands of books that are being published in alternative ways. You know, it's really common for, you know, thought leaders or even people that are doing memoirs and even fiction to hire a collaborator to help them realize their vision. And then to get it published through a hybrid or a self-publishing option. And there's a lot of value in a lot of those options that, you know, now that wasn't there 10, 15 years ago. So, you know, I would say about, you know, a good 40% of our clients are going through the traditional marketplace. And then the other 60% are looking at alternatives like hybrid publishers or self-publishing.
So I want to look at this phenomena from two different distinct directions. One is as someone who might be interested in becoming a ghostwriter. And then the other direction is I want to look at it as a business, the business that you run. So let's start with looking at it as someone who might be listening right now who thinks, I could do some ghostwriting, maybe not as their main gig, maybe as a side gig, or maybe that's something they want to do for the rest of their life. What makes a good ghostwriter? Because, I mean, it's not something you per se go to school for. And in fact, I would be interested in your stable group of writers, how many of them have a degree that really relates to writing versus not?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, good ghostwriters, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, you have to be adaptive. You have to be able to be flexible. You have to get inside an author's mind and be able to really embody their voice. And, you know, not every ghostwriter can work with every client. You know, it has to be a match. You know, you might look good on paper, but then you just can't, you know, you're not a good personality mix. You can't really capture their voice because, you know, you see things from a very different angle, or it's just a totally different, you're just too far apart in terms of your personality. Really, our best ghostwriters, the ones that we can keep very busy. You know, some of our ghostwriters are doing, you know, 6 to 8 books a year. And that's with us alone. And they're typically very adaptive, can capture a wide range of voices. They leave their ego behind them when they come to the project. They're really focused on the author's needs and wants rather than their, you know, it's like that balance. I mean, you want to bring that professional opinion to the project and help make sure that we're writing the best book possible. But in the end, it is that author's book. You know, we see it a lot where writers really want to get their own kind of ideas, or they have a problem with the direction of the book. And if they let that get in the way, then, you know, you're not going to be a successful ghostwriter. And then, of course, time management. I mean, and I think that's the thing that a lot of writers and creative types in general struggle with. You know, you can be the best ghostwriter in the world, but if we can't depend on that deadline, if we don't know when we're going to get that chapter back, then, you know, we can't run a business around that. So that's a real key part of this, is making sure that you can be dependable, that you're not overloading yourself with clients. And that you know, irrespective of deadlines and getting things done on time.
Do most ghostwriters act as independent contractors, or are they employed by specifically KAA?
Yeah, great question. So most are independent contractors. So we have an in-house team of about 30, and they're all editors. They're all former Big Five editors, actually, and literary agents. And they, you know, they act as quality control. They help with building the books, building the vision. They will do some ghostwriting, but it's more like writing proposals, writing query letters. When it's a full-length book, we're bringing in a ghostwriter that's freelance to help with that, just because when it comes to that part of the puzzle, we really want to have someone, a writer, that is as aligned as possible with that specific author. And so we're often bringing in, usually we do an interview with like three or four writers, and the client will interview multiple writers to see who's the best personality. And then you have the editor and a project manager on the project to help with, you know, as a team work together to realize the vision. But in general, most ghostwriters, I don't even know of one ghostwriter that's a full-time in-house writer. We've entertained it, actually, bringing someone like these more versatile writers, bringing them in-house, but it's something that we haven't done, and no one seems to be doing that. And a lot of these writers, a lot of successful writers, you know, to answer a previous point, you know, some of them it's a side gig where, you know, they're a professional author in their own right, and then this is a side thing. And others are like journalists or other, you know, have other careers in writing, and it's some way that they can make money, you know, in that. And since many ghostwriters, it's not their only way of making money, although there are some, you know, it makes much more sense to have them as an independent contractor that we can just bring in when we need them. And as you can imagine, I mean, you know, every book is so different. And when we have a project, you have a project that's like a 18th century, you know, German military history project. I mean, we just can't keep someone that's an expert in that on staff. You know, we got to bring in somebody that's perfectly suited for that project. And then we can have an editor in-house that's really, you know, that's done a lot of, you know, historical fiction and knows how to, or nonfiction, and knows how to do that in general and can guide the project. But then you've got a writer that's really, you know, a really expert in that subject area that can do all the writing and direct research.
I don't know if it's a question you can answer, but give me an understanding of what a top-ranked ghostwriter would generally charge, right? So these are people you're contracting with, you're working regularly, like, or if you want to turn it from the other side, I'm someone, maybe I'm a business person, I have a big idea or a memoir that I want ghostwritten for me. How much would I be expecting to pay?
That's a great question. Let's start at the top. So the very top of the marketplace is like J.R. Moringer. There's a couple other big, you know, he did Spare, obviously. There's a bunch of other, like he's usually getting like $1 million. You know, he's definitely someone that's at this point just so well known and established, and also just very picky that for him, you know, for him to get out of bed, it's going to take a big check, and it's going to have to align with him. You know, he's not going to just take any project, and it's been very clear that's how he operates. That, you know, but most really elite ghostwriters that have, you know, and what makes an elite ghostwriter? So someone that's done multiple New York Times bestsellers, that works with A-list celebrities, you know, that has a long track record in a diverse range of genre, you know, they're going to be in the 300,000 to 500,000 range. That's not uncommon. You might find some in more of the 150,000 to 250,000 range. You know, a lot of our projects we're selling, you know, we're a little different. We have a team, so we'll have that key ghostwriter, but then you also have an editor, and then we're doing more than just writing. I mean, we're building the book, we're figuring out the marketing plan, we're figuring out the navigation, we're potentially agenting it or making the deal directly with publishers or getting them an agent. We're doing beta testing, cultural accuracy reading. I mean, there's a lot that we do as a package to make sure that.
Do you guys publish on your own too? So it sounds like you generally go through the hybrid, the end product goes to a hybrid publisher or probably a Big Five publisher.
Right. Like 40% are Big Five projects, and then another 60 are doing alternative means. But no, we don't do any publishing in-house. Everything is we're figuring out ways to appeal to a big five, or making the introduction but we're doing all the navigation, all the strategy. How do we hit the bestseller list? How do we ensure the author is achieving their specific goals within their time frame? You know, some authors come to us and with their opportunity costs, they need that book out within a 6-month time frame. Well, that really limits your options in terms of what you can do with a publisher. But we figure out a way to make that work. Who's going to be the best publisher given this restrictions, and how are we going to make it happen in terms of writing the book and still giving it a chance of hitting the bestseller list? And we just kind of figure out all that strategy, but we don't do any publishing in-house. It's all writing, editing, strategy, anything editorial, that's where we fit in. And so that's why with us, I mean, it's not uncommon to have, a $3.5 million deal. Although our starting rate is 50K is like, where we start. Typical projects are in the 1 to 200 range. But then, independent ghostwriters, just a one-on-one, you can find them in the 15 to 30 range pretty frequently. But I will say, you definitely get what you pay for. When you're dipping down below 20, buyer beware.
Yeah. And it sounds like, again, from what I know of book writing too, is it's more than just writing a pleasing manuscript. I mean, that's just a small portion. It sounds like you get very much involved in the editing, the marketing, the agenting, sale of the book to the publisher, and all those things have nuance that you don't just get when you get someone who you pay $20,000 or $30,000 to help you make a real pretty manuscript.
That's right. I mean, the writer does one thing, right? I mean, it really takes a team to make this work. But the writer is an essential part. I mean, they're writing the book. But most ghostwriters, they're not going to have, they're not going to have the agency connections that we have. I mean, we work with all the major publishers. We do a lot, we work a lot with marketers and best-selling strategists. I mean, there's just a vast amount of connections and also, think about a writer. A writer, they might do 2 books, maybe 3, a professional ghostwriter a year. The top ones might do 7 or so. They do that for 10 years. That's 70 at most projects that they've worked with and had experience with. And we're doing 500 a year. I mean, we have a ton of experience, and so our clients are really tapping into all of that when they're hiring us. And also, the writers are there for a specific job, and they don't want to have to be getting sucked into your whole plan every step of the way. Once they finish the book, I mean, it's great if they can not get tied into a ongoing handholding process, because it is a long journey. I mean, these with the traditional publishing route, I mean, from the time you get the deal,
2 years.
Well, from the time you start, it could be easily 3 years. I mean, even when the time you get the deal until the time the book is out could be 2 years easily. So it's a long process, and most authors want somebody to help holding their hand throughout that process. And the writer isn't typically the best person to do that. The ghostwriter.
I can't help but thinking, as I listen to all this as an author, what chance do the little guys have? Because I'm thinking about someone like me, right? Who writes, I do not hire a ghostwriter. I write on my own. I got my own agents. We then pitch it to publishers. As you know, that's incredibly difficult. But looking at, for instance, the New York Times bestseller list, the likelihood of making it on there without using a ghostwriter and paying what it costs to do this has to be pretty small. Especially with all these really, really great professional writers out there who, like you said, are doing, like, there's only so many books that get on the New York Times bestseller list, and you're doing what, 500? How many deals are you doing a year? If you're really serious about doing this, I would think even if you're a great writer, you would have to be considering ghostwriting or at least aligning with a company like yours.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a great writer, you probably don't need a ghostwriter, but you probably want a really great editor or a book coach, right? To make sure that you're elevating your writing to the highest level. But let's be fair too. I mean, a lot of the New York Times bestseller list, especially in the nonfiction category, it's not as much about how great the writing is as much as their platform and how many books that person is able to sell. Like, what is their marketability? What's their, someone, and that's why these celebrity books are so they're so successful is because they have big platform. People follow them. People want to buy those books and learn more about them. In fiction, it's different, right? In fiction, especially literary fiction, yeah, I mean, you got to have really outstanding writing. But in nonfiction, you know, a big platform and a basic simple book. I think the big thing with nonfiction, though, is you've got to position things the right way. You can't just write another book. It could be a brilliant book, but if those concepts have already been done, or if an author like you is already broken into the market, it's going to be hard for you to justify to a publisher to buy your book, because that need might have already been filled. So with nonfiction authors, the real magic is what's the need out there that needs to be filled, and how can we be the voice, and how is this author the right person, the right expert to solve that need and be that voice and fill the gap in the literature. And so it becomes a lot about positioning and how do we write a book that's unique and fresh, and still connects with a need that's in it, that's out there.
We are talking to Kevin Anderson, who started a tiny ghostwriting agency to pay off his pending student debts, and we're discussing everything ghostwriting today. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights, we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. All right, so most of us know the bad news already. If you were using Mint as a budgeting app, it has shut down. But the good news is there's something better, and it's called Monarch Money. I started using Monarch Money myself about 5 months ago, and I knew immediately that I liked it more than any other budgeting app I had ever used. For one, it focuses on collaboration. This is easy to share with your spouse, your partner, your financial advisor. And it's aspirational. Not only can you look at your current budget, but what do you want to buy? What do you want your goals to be? You can focus on those in Monarch Money. It's the next generation of personal finance apps. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Furthermore, you can create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. Again, that's monarchmoney.com/EARN. What I like about this app is it's intuitive, easy to use, quick to sign on. It's collaborative, as we talked about. It's customizable. The idea is you can use this app the way you want to use it. And the reason why is the Monarch Money team is customer focused. They are focusing on you, me, and all the other people who want to use this app to live a better financial life. After trying out Monarch Money for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. That's monarchmoney.com/EARN for your extended 30-day free trial. We are back with Kevin Anderson, who is part of Kevin Anderson Associates. He is the founder of it. It started as a tiny agency, but now boasts a staff of New York Times bestselling writers and editors and competes with the traditional big five publishers using about a fourth of the resources and a tenth of the staff. Kevin, let's talk about how you established this business. So originally you were worried about your graduate school debt, et cetera. You got into this. Tell us about your first client. What was your first gig?
I remember this very clearly, actually. So basically I was a tutor and I was working for another company. You know, I was tutoring English and it was getting late. The student had a exam the next day and they had only paid for a certain amount of time. And she said to me, she said, look, I just need you to stay longer. You know, I can't, the agency's closed. I can't call them to pay for my more time. You know, can you just stay for another hour? I'll just pay you what they pay you, plus, you know, 10% or whatever. And just please, you know, just, I really need you to stay. And so I said, okay, sure. I'll stay. And, you know, we can do this. And then when I told her what I got paid, which I think was like $25 an hour or something, her mouth just dropped. And she was just like, oh my gosh, like I'm paying, I forget what it was, $80 an hour or something for me. And, you know, I was like, huh, interesting. So I, you know, I kept working for the company, but, and, you know, there was no exclusivity, you know, contract or anything. And I started also just independently, selling myself as a Harvard educated tutor that, you know, I definitely used that, to marketing advantage. And I was just inundated, very quickly. You know, there was back in the days of Craigslist. And you know, there was a lot of options for getting the name out there. So I put myself out there as a tutor that could meet with them directly. And I got so much business and it just, I don't know, it just always made sense to me. Okay. I got too much business. Let's spread it around, you know, I got a friend who's just as good as me at all these things. I'll just take a cut and I'll get them some work. And so it just seemed to just made sense to me. As long as I was getting too busy, let's just start hiring other people. That was the birth of the business. You know, what didn't take long. And another key moment was, it didn't take long before someone reached out. I remember it clearly. I was down in a computer lab because that's where I did all my work, was like from the Harvard Library computer lab. And I got an email from someone from across the country and they wanted us, you know, they wanted tutoring, but they weren't local and they just wanted, in fact, they didn't even want tutoring. They just wanted to look at their essay and just give them some feedback. Just look at it, give me feedback, tell me, you know, how I can make this better. Like, give me some, just pretend like you're a professor looking at it, giving feedback so that I can kind of make this into a better essay and get the tutoring on in that way. And yeah, and another light bulb just went off. I was like, oh yeah, this is great. I don't have to like send anyone to, you know, I don't have to worry about those logistics. It's, you know, and it was in the early days of PayPal. So we could easily just run, you know, run the invoice and get paid remotely. And, you know, it probably wasn't even within months that I just changed everything from tutoring to online, online advisement, online tutoring.
How did that become ghostwriting? Because still you sound like your everyday guy. You sound like your everyday smart guy, right? Or smart girl who did well at school. They're like, how am I going to make some money? Sure, I'll tutor you, no problem.
Yeah.
That's a far cry from what you are today. So how'd you get from there to here? Yeah.
All right. So never was smart, by the way. Always was more of the hard worker. I was always envious of the smart people that could just walk in and ace everything. But anyway, so it was probably a couple of years later, 2008 or so, that a Vanity Press reached out. And by this time we had all Harvard PhD staff and that was our thing. And we're all, you know, English PhDs. And they reached out. They said, look, we're having a heck of a time finding copy editors. You know, can you do this? We said, yeah, of course we can. We had never copy edited a book before. You know, we'd done academic formatting and APA formatting, but this was a first for us. But I always took a yes, we can attitude. Like, yes, we can do it. And then figure it out after, right? So always said yes to the client and then went back to the group and said, okay, well, who's got book experience? And, you know, kind of, and sure enough, some people had done some of that. And, we did all the right things, edited, quality control and whatever, but this Vanity Press wanted a ton of work. And, you know, pretty soon they sent a project that was almost uneditable. They said, edit this. And we looked at it and we said, we can't even edit this. It's not even close. And they said, well, can you rewrite it? And once again, we just said, you know, I just said, of course we can. You know, I'd never done that before, but I figured, you know, how, you know, of course we can do this. You know, we sent them a quote. I think it was like, you know, $5,000, something that we would spend. So it's something that we'd charge, you know, easily $30,000 for. You know, it was at that time, it was much smaller scale. And, you know, we rewrote the book and, you know, and it went great. Everyone was happy. And you know, that led to ghostwriting. Same thing where they were just, hey, we just got this concept. You did a great job rewriting this book. Can you ghostwrite? And again, just said yes and figured out, you know, tap the network, see who was willing to ghostwrite. I think our first ghostwriting project was $8,000. And, you know, we were, and I just couldn't believe that someone was going to pay us $8,000. Right. Like it was unbelievable to me that we could make money writing books. I had no idea.
So you were at Harvard for kind of PhD English type work.
Right.
How did you know how to run a business? Like, did someone help you? Did you just kind of wing it? Like, where did you get, like, you weren't a Harvard MBA, you were a Harvard PhD. Like, where did this come from?
Just figuring it out. Yeah. I mean, just so kind of
grit.
Led to another.
You grinded it out till you figured it out. Huh?
Just figured it out. Yeah. Just made sense. Like, if you're too busy, hire other people. If you're, you know, and things like, you know, I learned the hard way on some things. Like, you know, I took too long to hire an accountant. You know, I was trying to do my own taxes, doing those things. And eventually, okay, well, you really, you know, I'm spending so much time doing this. Just pay somebody $1,000 to handle this for you. And you know, same with management. You know, a lot, like in the early stages, I was doing everything. I was posting ads. I was doing all the sales. I was doing all the project management. And, you know, I was working from 4 a.m. till 7 p.m. every day. But, you know, I loved it. But eventually, you know, to grow, you had to start letting go, which is the hardest thing. I mean, any entrepreneur will tell you that. That's the hardest thing, is to start letting go. And because no one's ever going to do it just the way you want or as good as you, or at least as good as you think you can. But for you to grow and scale, you have no choice. You know, it's better to have multiple people doing the job 70% as well as you, but that's giving you that time to really, you know, to focus on the bigger items. Like, and so, yeah, no, there was never any kind of business training. It was just kind of trial and error and figuring it out and, you know, hiring really smart people. I mean, you know, if there's one thing I did right was hire great people, to help leverage and do really great work.
So as we talked about briefly in the break, you've branched out into some other businesses, right? Some real estate, you're soon probably in the stock market doing some things there. You've had some profits, you've become an investor in different ways. Talk about the ghostwriting business. How is that different from other businesses? Is there anything unique to it specifically that you've learned over the years?
Yeah. I mean, it is unique. I mean, we're also a unique company within this whole industry. You know, it's very unusual to have an in-house team like we have of W-2s that, you know, six-figure W-2s that are, you know, we pay them as well as what they get paid at a publisher and better. But without all the corporate BS and the expecting to work over hours and after hours. I mean, it's very unusual to have like a shop like ours with in-house people. You know, the matchmaker is much more common, where it's, you know, just finding a ghostwriter as a matchmaking service. Having an in-house shop where you can hire a firm is really unique. The ghostwriting industry also is unique compared to, I mean, the other businesses are, you know, I mean, investments and real estate, et cetera. I mean, they're much more, I don't know. It's when you're working with, you know, the ghostwriting thing is much more of a talent business, right? You're working with talent. You're working with people who are really established, who have, you know, who have big egos, but for a good reason. You know, they've done a lot in this business. And so it's really fun because you're working at a really high level. I mean, it's not uncommon for us to be seeing our titles on the top of the New York Times bestseller list or seeing our clients in the news. You know, we've worked with a lot of A-list clients. I mean, we worked with, you know, Maroon 5. We've worked with, you know, the cast of The Office, the producers of the show The Office. I mean, the list goes on and on. So that's really fun to just be in like a part of that conversation and feel like you're really a part of the zeitgeist. But the challenge is that, you know, all the people you're working with are really accomplished. So there's a balance of just respecting that professionalism, but also being able to all work together and follow the guidelines and run a operation that has predictability and everyone's kind of marching to the same tune. I think that's a big challenge with this industry, but it's, you know, it comes with so many fun perks, and the people you work with, can't be beat. You know, it's just, it's amazing that the people that you run into, and every day is totally unique. And you never know who's going to come through the come through the door next.
What's next with Kevin Anderson Associates? Where do you expect it to go from here?
Yeah, well, we just opened up a shop in London, a London office that's all UK, all UK based. We're thinking of expanding into Canada and Dubai within the next year or two. You know, there's a lot of growth potential left for us. You know, we're unique in that we've never taken investments, we've never taken loans. It's always been a profitable company, but that's also given us a lot of flexibility. Like, you know, it's probably stunted our growth, to be honest, even though we've grown like a 30% rate year over year for I think 6 years running now. But sure, we could have probably grown faster had we done things a little bit differently, but it's also allowed us to really maximize our flexibility and do things the way we want to do them. For us, the future, we just, you know, we want to continue to expand and in terms of, you know, expand our pool, expand our in-house team. You know, we want to keep attracting that top level talent in-house. But I think doing more of a global approach to business is definitely something that we're really into. We have some, you know, personally, I have some foreign investments, you know, that, you know, real estate, and I love having that cross cultural connection. The London office is really bridging the gaps from, you know, the Western and Eastern hemisphere. Dubai would help us to do that even more so. Just connecting over different cultures, different people, different countries, trying to be that entity that can really help bridge the gaps for people, being an expert in multiple places so that we can ensure that we're serving the clients effectively in more than one country is a really big, you know, something that we really look forward to and really enjoy doing.
And Kevin, if people want to get in touch with you and learn more either about what you do or how to use your services, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, best way would be to just, you can contact us directly. Just, you know, you can do info@kawriting.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. You can connect with me there. If you write Kevin Anderson ghostwriting, you know, that'll put me ahead of the tennis player and the sci-fi author. By the way, the other Kevin Anderson works with us. So there's a Kevin J. Anderson, who's a really amazing science fiction writer, does a lot of the Star Wars stuff. And sometimes his agent gets us mixed up sometimes at Trident, which is always fun. But yeah, it's that's probably the best way to reach out. And we're happy to help anybody, you know, get them in the right direction, whether they want to work with us or not. You know, we're a real big believer in helping people figure out this industry and just doing what we can to lend a hand.
Kevin Anderson of Kevin Anderson Associates, thank you so much for being on Earn and Invest today.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure. Thanks so much, Jordan.
That's a wrap.
Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts.
In my first book, Taking Stock, I discussed quite a bit this idea of the life review. This is a structured series of questions that we use in hospice with the dying. After we've controlled their symptoms, we found a safe place for them to spend their last few days, whether that's in the hospital or at home or in a nursing home. We generally sit down with them and we talk about their lives and what they've accomplished and not accomplished, and what they feel good about and don't feel good about, and specifically what they regret. This is the life review. And in my first book, Taking Stock, I talked a lot about this idea that we should all at least do a mini life review. That's asking ourselves this essential question. If you found yourself lying on your deathbed bemoaning your life, what would you regret never having the energy, courage, or time to do? And answering that question is germane to your sense of purpose. Now, I've done this process quite a number of times with myself, and especially a bunch of years ago when I did my own life review, I came up with the fact that I always regret if I didn't write a book, and specifically traditionally publish it. This was something I always wanted to do, but I let fear, anxiety, lack of time, lack of courage get in the way. And so a big thing for me was to actually go and conquer this fear and write a book and try to traditionally publish it and put myself in the position where I could fail and fail mightily, but I was doing something that was deeply important and meaningful to me. That was part of the reason I wanted to do this episode today with Kevin. When I went ahead and started the process of learning how to write a book and getting it traditionally published, I realized that it was a whole world that most of us know nothing about. Traditional publishing is confusing, it's difficult, and most of us have this concept that we'd love to get a book published, but have no idea how the industry actually works. So I had to learn all sorts of things. I had to learn how to get an agent. I had to learn how to do a book proposal. I had to learn really how to write differently because I was a blogger. And as a blogger, the way I wrote really didn't work as well for long form manuscripts. All of this I had to learn. I had to delve into the culture of book writers, book writing, and publishing. And one of the things I found really interesting is that I used to think that the way to be a successful author was to write a really good book. What I've learned since is that's not 100% true. Of course, writing a good book helps. But actually, whether you're successful or not, especially in getting a book deal, often has to do with how big of a brand you have, especially if you're writing nonfiction. If you have millions and millions of followers, you don't really have to be a very good writer in order to get a book deal. The other thing I learned is that there are all sorts of helpers out there that can help you take your idea and make it into an appealing book. The first helper that I dealt with was an agent, and then I met with a book coach when I was doing my book proposal. But I also found out once you get a book deal, often there are editors who really help you write quite a bit, or at least help you clean up your writing. Or in the case of really famous people or people who have very big brands and followings, probably write most of the book for them. And last but not least, I also learned about what we talked about today, that there are ghostwriters, people who will take the story, make it appealing, and write it in order to set you up to have maximal sales and get a great book publishing deal. Seeing behind the curtain was both exciting and also a little bit of a letdown because my dream of this idea that being a great writer would help you float to the top wasn't necessarily true. And a little of my sadness of realizing a lot of these people who are New York Times bestsellers actually aren't great writers. Both of these things were a little bit upsetting, but also helped me understand better book publishing and what it takes to be an author. And that's why I wanted to do this episode for everyone out there to hear and learn some of the things that I learned about book publishing and what it means to be an author. I imagine some of what you've heard in this episode has surprised you. Certainly learning these things surprised me. I know some of what you might have heard in this episode was a little bit shocking today, especially if you had that same pure vision of book publishing that I had. But ultimately, like I say with my coaching clients, if you want a different outcome, you have to do something different. In this case, you have to learn something different. You have to put yourself out there. And instead of changing things or being upset when they're not exactly the way you want them to be, you have to adapt and pivot and change. And that's what it took for me in order to become an author. I think part of that journey starts with what I try to provide here, which is the knowledge to know and do better.
All right, I keep things rolling just to catch any of our after show, just a few minutes of what we talk about. Anything I didn't ask you about, either about ghostwriting or about your business or anything you wanted to make sure we get in?
I don't know. I don't know. I think we covered some good stuff. What did you think? How did you feel about it?
So,
what did you?
Well, I love the conversation because this is something I obviously, being an author, being someone who's interested in writing, it's something I'm highly interested in. And I think it's a little bit of a black box. So I think there are a lot of people out there. So we know if you look at the populace in general, more and more people are either writing books or want to write books. And especially with self-publishing, the barriers are much lower. But very few people really understand what's behind the curtain, especially novices, right? So if you are someone who's published multiple books or are in the industry, of course, you have a good feeling for what having an agent looks like, what working with a publisher looks like, what working with an editor looks like. Or in this case, what working with a ghostwriter looks like. Right. I had zero clue of any of that stuff when I'm like, I should write a book. I have an interesting story and this could be cool, right? And I have lots and lots of friends who have very successful books because they're lots of friends who have big platforms, right? And especially in the personal finance world. So they've got these huge platforms. They're very popular. They're great marketers. And they end up having New York Times best-selling books or at least books that sell 100,000 copies or more. So But you have a lot of people like me who are just kind of like, we're not the biggest of the big, but we have something to say and we want to say it. And a lot of us want to go with, like, I really wanted to do traditional publishing. Yeah. And so it's a black box. And I think this is part of that black box that a lot of us don't understand. So to me, getting in and having that conversation, I think could be really illuminating for people. And they don't realize how big of a business is. So, like, I knew, for instance, when I asked you how much it would cost to ghostwrite, you know, like, I had a good idea. I mean, I had talked to people who were not part of kind of a world-renowned group who were charging 50K plus, right? And this is kind of more of a book coach who did some ghostwriting, right? Sure. And so I kind of knew that, but people don't realize how big the numbers are and how difficult it is to really get a New York Times bestseller. Like, You are going up against people who, like you said, a lot of them have huge platforms. Like, because I'm in the nonfiction world, so I'm not in the fiction world. So in the nonfiction world, a lot of them have huge platforms, but a lot of them also realize that they're just not writers. So they either get a big five publishing deal and the editor mostly writes it for them or does a little bit of what you would do. They pretty much ghostwrite it for them, or they hire someone like you. That's a huge population of these, really well-known people. Rappers, big time business people who you wouldn't think normally, oh, that's going to be a really good writer. Yet they have these wonderfully appealing books. And part of that is they have wonderfully appealing stories. And then they have people like you who help them turn their stories into something that's readable, digestible. And in fact, even better than that, it's really appealing to read. So that was a very long-winded answer, but I'm just fascinated by the world. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, you go.
I was just going to say, in my deep dive of being an author, like I partially also part of interviewing is to help me deepen my understanding of what these fields are, et cetera. So, I would like to continue publishing books for the next 5 to 10 years. So my goal is, but I also don't have any necessary outcome other than the joy of writing them and hopefully getting some ideas out to the world. So I don't need what a lot of people need. So like, for instance, I have a third book I'm working on right now, which is a very kind of off the cuff, out of the box medical book. So I'm actually going to go to a small medical publisher because I don't need I've done lots of, I don't know how much you know about me. My first book was called Taking Stock and it's about what being a hospice doctor taught me about medicine and life or money and life. Right. And so I'm one of those weird people who I'm a practicing hospice physician. So I see end of life stuff, but I also kind of, I'm on the other side as a personal finance expert. And that's led me to my second book, which is about purpose, because a lot of my first book really got people pushing me on the idea of purpose and how it works. And so the first one I went with a very small independent publisher. The second one was bought by Harriman House was bought by Pan Macmillan. Wow. Right. Well, you know them well, especially if you're UK. So Harriman House was recently bought by Pan Macmillan. So I kind of fell into being kind of in the big five publishing, but didn't start there.
You care about your money. Of course you do. So why aren't you listening to SoFi Daily? This podcast will keep you updated on the latest news in the stock market and how it could impact your financial life. Stay on top of what's happening. Listen to SoFi Daily wherever you get your podcasts. That's SoFi Daily wherever you get your podcasts. Tech moves fast. So keep pace with the Daily Crunch podcast from TechCrunch. With new episodes every day, this podcast will give you a quick overview on everything you need and should know about startups, new tech, regulations, and more. Listen to TechCrunch Daily Crunch now, wherever you get your podcasts. That's TechCrunch Daily Crunch, wherever you get your podcasts.